Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to have an intro with some news and then a recap of Worlds. We're going to have an interview with the 2.0 Melee Champion, the 2.0 Joust Champion after Sam will come on. Then we're going to have an interview with the 2.0 Runner-Up, after of which we're going to have the Tip of the Week and then a review of some tokens and finally some closing comments with information about next week's episode.
Episode 41, John, although it's really sort of a 40 part 2.
Yeah, we're really just extending our world coverage into the 2.0 side of things.
We got a lot of 2.0 guests, a lot of good things, but we'll still go over the news. There was some news since then. To start off, a bunch of 2.0 tournaments, they're now flooding the annals. I'll sort of rapid fire them because we do have a lot of content to go through. In Algiers, yep. In France, a 16-person tournament that Écureuil took with Night's Watch Fealty. Tours, also in France, Ashai won it with Barra, Banner of the Rose. It was a 15-person tournament. Sydney, we had a Targ Fealty take an 8-person. In Manila, in the Philippines, a Stark Kraken won an 8-person. In Spain, in La Comarca, a Night's Watch Fealty won. I don't have any further info. So we have two Night's Watch Fealty winning this weekend, which is interesting. In Zaragoza, we had a Bear Fealty win a 13-person tournament. And in Florida, the Patrick Haynes' world second place Greyjoy Fealty was net decked and won a 12-person field. So it's certainly a solid deck. Yep. Finally, another Night's Watch won in Zagreb in Croatia, a little 7-person round robin tournament. So that's three Night's Watches in a weekend.
It's coming. It's going to happen.
It's going to, yeah. We're really going to be eating our words. It's great.
I'm super happy about this.
People doing some fun stuff. Other news from this week. John, have you checked out our Facebook page?
I have. There are a ton of spoilers on that page.
This is a weird situation because they're from an official source. Yep. But I'm almost certain they shouldn't have been.
I agree. So, not that many all at once. I think they were supposed to let those go little by little, but they just blew up.
Yeah, so they have a preview set of 6 cards from each chapter pack in this first cycle. So they're in Czech, and unfortunately our translations aren't necessarily 100%.
And you talk every language, Alex, and I heard that some Czechs actually confirm the translation or pretty close.
True, but we also have to be – so this is sort of my – not necessarily pet peeve, but there are already people asking rules questions about how these cards work. I need the exact English wording to know if the question is tricky, because they don't always get translated properly from the English, and some of the terminology may not be identical in all the cases. The best example being, I thought I'd spotted a mistake in these cards, but it turns out that the way that they use cases, the ending of the word wouldn't matter for distinguishing between traits. You know, I couldn't have known – well, I should have known that. I should have spoken Czech, but don't ask me rules questions about cards that we don't have the English text on, please. We won't go over all the spoilers in specific. Maybe we'll do that next week. But any sort of broad
trends? People can check out our Facebook page and like us because they're awesome while they're there to check out spoilers. I mean, Martell's got these cool new attachments that remove icons. And I think if Valor ever comes into, you know, 2.0, they're going to be very powerful because the ability to remove a bunch of attachments and Valor and then get those attachments back, put them on other characters, remove more icons, very strong.
That's exactly one of the things I wanted to talk about. But just as you said that thing about wanting to have more people come on our site and like us, someone heard you through the ether and we picked up a like. We're now at 800 as of the instant we're recording. 97 new likes this week. So
we have some prizes, don't we, Alex?
We do. We're going to have to give out some prizes to someone who's liked us on Facebook this week.
Yeah, 1,000 likes. We want 1,000 likes.
We just picked up 100 this week. Yeah, we can hit 1,000, and then
we want 1,000 likes.
We'll do a draw, and I've got some stuff for them. I've got a pair of Time Walker deck boxes to
give out. And they're sweet.
We'll be reviewing those next week. That'll go to someone of the 1,000 people that have liked us. So, back to the cards, though.
All right. Back to the cards. Fine.
I think that's probably the take-home message for me, is that they really are exploring some new design space unique to second edition. Some non-terminal negative attachments, some reserve modifiers, things that wouldn't have existed in first edition.
And that's awesome, because it shows that the designers are taking this opportunity to grow the game, and I'm really happy with that. I didn't want to play exactly the same game. I already played first edition. So it's great that they're making second edition unique.
And as you say, the non-terminal negative attachments, be it fishing net or those icon strippers from Martell, I don't know how they're going to play out in practice. I really don't. I can't wait to get my hands on them. That's the really fun bit.
I've been kind of holding back on 2.0 for a while because my friends haven't been playing and other things have been going on in my life. But I've been getting into it more this week. And it's a great game, Alex.
Do we not have a quote of you saying this like 3 weeks ago?
Maybe, but I've been actually doing it this week. Yeah. Did I not play you like 3 or 4 times today?
You did indeed. You did indeed. I also want to comment that there's some middling art, but there's some stellar art too. That Dagmar Cleftjaw looks fantastic. That Winterfell Crypt looks amazing. So there are some cards that rank among the best we've seen in the LCG so far, which is encouraging as well. Hopefully the cards that see play, because it's always better when they do.
Great art, never see play. Now, sad.
The next topic I wanted to move on to is probably one that you have more to say about than I do. I saw there was a tabletop simulator mod to play Thrones through Tabletop Simulator, which is a program on Steam. The tabletop simulator costs like $20, but the module for Thrones is free. Maybe tell our listeners something about that.
That makes me sad. I mean, FFG should come out with an actual Game of Thrones, Conquest, Lord of the Rings, you know, all their LCGs. They should come out with a simulator for all their LCGs. I'd be willing to pay $2-3 a month, no problem, for something like that. Official, easy, that can be used on any platform. I've been trying to get them to do something like that forever. I have a feeling that they've contacted a company to do that for them, and that company has just fallen short. Like, where's our simulator already?
Well, I think this one, I haven't played it yet because I don't own Tabletop Simulator. I'd be a little wary of buying Tabletop Simulator just for this Thrones module.
I would think what they're doing is completely illegal. I mean,
yeah, but then again, I sort of think Octagon is as well, because the agreement.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Or the agreement that was initially in place with Octagon about censoring was all very fuzzy. So I would be cautious about buying it if this is the only thing you're using it for, because there may be troubles, especially if FFG does try and get their own one off
the FFG ground. Has to protect their intellectual property.
Uncensored art and uncensored cards. Yeah. And
well, I mean, if they allow another online game to go on for too long, it's actually almost impossible them to sue them later. So they have to get involved as soon as they know about it. So,
I mean, we don't know a ton about copyright issues and the like, but there's certainly that consideration. There's also the consideration that this, if someone's setting up this established thing just because FFG doesn't have it already, that doesn't mean you're not damaging their future sales.
Exactly.
If they have something like this in the works and you've already sort of established this player base. Anyway, don't take legal advice from us, ever.
No, nope. We're not lawyers.
But I would say we know that Octagon is on shaky ground, and I would say that this one, given that it doesn't have the censoring and so on, is would on slightly shakier ground. That doesn't mean anything's going to happen, but I think that's the word of warning.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy anything right now from them. I would wait.
There were a couple of things that we didn't get to last week that we were supposed to have said. One was to plug Rob St. John's work covering 2.0 stuff during Worlds.
You know, Alex, I remember the first time I met that guy. He drove up from Toronto for a little tournament, and he was like, oh, I'm new to the game, but I'm really interested in it. And now he does so much for the community. It's amazing. He is televising games all the time. He's got that YouTube channel. I mean, he's got a kid. He has a wife. And still he finds the time to always do this. Fantastic. Really happy with Rob.
Yeah, he's actually live streaming as we're recording. I had to turn off his live stream to start recording. And he covered a top 16, top 8, and top 4 game, all of which are posted now from 2.0. Our guests actually reference to those specific games and recommend you watch one or two of them. Oh. So definitely do exactly that.
Yeah, he does a lot for the community. If you can support him, you should.
Other news from worlds that we didn't get to cover is that there were actually a couple of interviews with FFG or by FFG, depending on which way it went, with
Team Covenant as well.
And yep. Shut Up and Sit Down. And I won't go into details about them. You can watch those interviews. They're either on the Twitch streams or on Team Covenant's YouTube channel or linked to on Shut Up and Sit Down as well. But I will say that there's a comment that came up in two of those interviews, which was that there was higher female representation in Thrones 2.0 than in any of their games at that inaugural tournament. And they talked
That's great.
It is. It's fantastic. And they did talk a little bit about some of the reasons that might be the case without the same established necessarily player base. When a game is newer, there's more of a chance to break the gender imbalance that exists in a longer established community that may already sort of be discouraging towards certain groups. Hopefully that's not the case in Thrones, but that's very encouraging. And I noticed it when putting in all the names, the first names in the annals, that either there are some men with some very effeminate names, or we have a much higher
proportion. Could happen.
So I hope that that's something that we can make a real effort to work on. I know that it was actually one of our shortcomings in the first year of the cast. We had no female guests, and we remedied that a little bit this year. We'd certainly like to continue to improve that as well. I think it's an important part of the community as well. The next thing, I don't know if you haven't been keeping an eye out on AGOT cards, which I know that a lot of 2.0 players haven't been doing.
Because it's useless for that.
It's useless for 2.0. Leplant stumbled upon something really interesting that I didn't know at all. Are you anywhere near your cards, John?
No, they haven't been opened, actually, physically yet. But they will be soon.
So it turns out, and I had no idea about this, that on the card back, there are the house symbols of every single faction.
Really?
They're hidden in, like, the scroll work and the metal binding, and they're all there.
Can you hear this? I'm actually opening my packs, Alex.
You're actually opening your packs. Yeah. I hope our listeners will do the same. You can see evidence of all of them in there. And, I mean, how random is it to, first of all, have noticed that, and that they didn't plug that. They just hid it in there and said, someone someday will find that out.
On the back of every card?
On the card back.
Okay.
Okay. If you're, say, holding it up upright, so the raven is obviously the Night's Watch directly under the thing.
Sure.
But the metal binding on the right side has the dragon at the top, Martell's son in the middle, and the kraken at the bottom.
Oh, yeah,
in opposite
I do see
directions,
it.
Right? Yep. In the middle between those two bindings that leads into the Iron Throne are the horns
of the
stag.
As I'm opening my cards, I see this, and I am impressed.
Yeah, and then the other bindings have a tiny little direwolf in one corner and a tiny little lion in the other. And then there's the Tyrell Rose in the scroll work around the middle. Yep. So they're all there. That's
impressive.
Awesome.
It is, though.
I think Leptalt was the first person to find this out, to the best of my knowledge.
Vive la France.
Vive la France. So I don't have any other news. I would like us to recap briefly the world's information. But do you have anything else before we jump into that?
I don't.
All right. So in very, very brief, we did cover this last week. We did go in more detail in the news. Worlds started with the Laughing Tree Pre-Worlds Tournament, which had 31 players and was won by Andres Greyjoy Fealty. It's still not in the annals, so boo.
Yeah, you guys suck. Like, really?
The Saturday tournament was a 117-person joust won by a 1.0 champion, joust champion from the previous year, Sam Bratz. He was playing a really underdog deck, a Martell Rose, that we did not expect to see that. But I'm so happy to be eating my hat on the cast. It means the core, as you said, has much more depth than we thought.
Me too, though I'm super happy I had left and right, because that makes me right.
Yeah, we get into that later.
All right, I'm done.
But something I did neglect to mention is that for commentating those matches, Evan Johnson and Mark from FFG did a phenomenal job on that. It was the best casting of the weekend, as far as I can tell. They were enthusiastic. They were good at asking the kind of questions that new players would ask because they may be seeing this for the first time. They were knowledgeable about the cards, recognizing them, and they were a blast to listen to. So
yeah, they brought up all this great stuff. Very well done. I was listening to the cast live, and I was kept typing like, wow, what a great job you guys are doing, because they really were top-notch.
Also, just to go over why we were eating our hats, the faction distribution in the end, really only 4 Martell and 5 Tyrell, and one of each of those made it to the cut.
That's where we eat our hat.
And 10 out of 16 of the cut was the Targ, but none in the final. 2 out of 16 were Farah, and none of those made it to the top 8.
I mean, personally, I was expecting a Targ fealty win, so
I was expecting Lanny to make it into the cut, and then a toss up between Targ and Lanny to win. But
Lanny was solid.
I'm wrong. The deck lists, the top 10 deck lists, you can find them. They're linked in the annals, and you can find them on the White Book Podcast website, where they've been collecting top deck lists. They have all of the top 4 for the World's Joust tournament. The other comment I would like to make is that of those, we omitted one of the top 4 in our interviews today. That's Neil Kimball from Summer's Coming. This is not intended as a slight to him in any way. He's just too cool for us. We didn't even ask. We figured he has his own cast. He'll be talking about his world's experience with Tiny, I'm sure of it. And so we didn't want to overlap too much with the other casts. The Sunday was a 53-person melee. It included taking the black. It was a side event. And it was a 3 rounds of Swiss and won by GK Shukov, the UK Conquest National Champ, who we also have on for an interview in this next segment.
Yep.
Is that our lead up?
That's our lead up.
Lead in?
We're good.
Lead in?
Lead in. Transition.
We are joined today by Varun from the UK. He's also known as GK Shukov. I actually have to start with that. Why Zhukov? Big World War II history buff?
When I started signing up to various forums and things, I was reading a book about Zhukov, and it was kind of before he was really as well-known as he probably is now. So that was years and years ago on a different forum. And I kind of, even though as a person he might have a number of flaws, like militarily, I found him quite interesting, so I went with that, really.
All right. So for those of our audience who don't know, you've already risen to great fame in the Conquest world, having won the UK Nationals followed by the World Championships this last weekend. But despite your forum name, not using the Imperial Guard.
Yeah, not using the Imperial Guard. That's true. Like I say, the name predates Conquest at Throne. So,
The reason we have you on here is not to congratulate you for your Conquest performance, which I'm sure
congratulations.
Was
exceptional. Cheers.
But to talk a little bit about that, you also won the 2.0 Melee side event at Worlds. So you're a Thrones player.
Yeah, I am, I guess.
What do you mean you guess? You're a world champion Thrones player.
It's a side event, a sort of semi-world champion.
So how long have you been playing Thrones? Did you jump in with 2.0, or was this something that you had an eye on for a while?
So I briefly played 1.0 for maybe a year. I can't remember how long ago it was now. I know it was before the Lannister big box came out. And, I mean, while I say it was about a year, it was, like, not that many games. There were a group of us who would meet up maybe once a month or something to play a melee. And then that group kind of stopped playing. So I stopped playing and sold up. But I was interested in Thrones, so I read the books before there was an HBO series, so it was always something that I was interested in terms of the theme. So when 2.0 came out, it made sense to get back into it, and I was in a different city where there were people who were playing it, so it was a kind of group there.
Or was it something that you had your eye on for a while? Knowing that you've been involved in the Conquest scene, you must have had an eye on the FFG lineups.
Yeah, so I knew it was coming out. I didn't know how much I would get into it, but I knew that I wanted to pick it up. It offers, you know, I like the two-player, but for me, Conquest is my primary two-player game. What it offered was that melee of getting together with some people you know, having a chat and a few drinks while playing the game. And that's something slightly different from the other LCGs that are going. So I knew I was going to pick it up. I just didn't know I was going to go and play melee at Worlds and win it.
So you're a competitive melee player now. You're going to have to go to the big melee tournaments around the UK. Are there any?
I think there are, I haven't really looked into it. Like, so I know a few guys who play competitively and go around the UK. Like, I'm quite lucky in the area that I'm in. There's quite a few competitive players there. But I haven't really looked into what the competitive scene is. So it's something that I will look into now, I guess.
So is that saying that you were basically going into this melee itself blind? You know, taking a deck you liked but not really knowing much about how competitive 2.0 melee was going to play?
Kind of. I chatted to a couple of the guys who played a lot of competitive 1.0 melee where I am, so I kind of had a bit of an idea, and I'd asked them to, you know, have a quick look at my deck. But yeah, in one sense, I didn't really know what to expect. But then I guess most people, even like kind of the old pros, didn't necessarily know what to expect in a new environment with new people and a new core set.
I think that's fair, yeah. So tell us a little bit about your deck. And actually, I don't know if you have a deck list you're willing to share as well.
Yes, I have put the deck on CardGameDB. It is up there.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
It's a Greyjoy Rose deck. So like, I played a handful of games of Melee before going to Worlds because it obviously hasn't been out that long anywhere, and in particular outside of America, we always get things a bit later. So I'd played a couple of games as Martell Rose and a couple of games as Greyjoy Fealty, and I decided in the end to kind of stick them together, kind of the best factors of both those decks. And I guess I felt that Greyjoy offered both the ability to accumulate some early power in a kind of not massively threatening way, so not by like screwing over other people, like with the different, especially with the Rose and the different renowned characters that you can get. And then Greyjoy also offers that ability to completely leap in power in one turn before anyone can stop you, which I kind of felt was there in Martell, but in Martell they didn't have the other bit. So it was like if you mistimed the leap, then you ended up really badly off, whereas with Greyjoy, you could just be getting power in the meantime, if that makes sense. I don't know if it does.
Especially a world since Rise was legal, right?
Yeah, so that made a difference. Rise, obviously the Great Kraken itself, having stealth characters means it's on a melee board, it's pretty easy to find that unopposed challenge somewhere. And that combination of things, I just felt it works pretty well, really. And obviously Balon Greyjoy, again, can push through stuff. They've got a lot of finishing options. And the Rose side, stuff like Marjorie can act as a real negotiating tool as well.
Mm-hmm. It works on any player, yeah.
Yeah.
So how did the release of Taking the Black for the Melee tournament affect your choice? Or had you already decided on the deck and then you made a few quick swaps?
So I decided on the deck, and the only thing I changed was I pulled out one Clash of Kings, which I'd been debating whether two was really necessary anyway, and replaced it with a Rise of the Kraken. If I'd had a bit more time, I would have considered finding a way to fit in Support of the People and Street of Sisters, but with all the conquests in the 2 days before, I was pretty shattered and didn't really want to sit down, go through my deck and work out what I'd take out, basically. I also only got hold of a Taking the Black, like, just before the melee, so
it's going to be swaps, yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you'd played a little bit of melee before in first edition and now with the second edition. Did you have a strategy to do with the titles?
It's hard to say because I didn't play first edition melee for that long, but I felt that there were more opportunities within second edition melee to protect yourself if you were in a good position. It wasn't quite as easy for three people to gang up on you and take you out. I mean, that's still an option, but it felt like, I think having the titles picked secretly meant you can be stitched up from the get-go in that sense. I think there were probably one or two times where I did think, I need to protect myself from this player. If I pick this title, I've got a good chance he's picked that one or someone's picked that one. But a lot of the time it was kind of going for what I found would be useful to me.
What other really interesting decks did you run into? Obviously, you thought your deck was good and it proved itself, but there must have been a few other interesting or strong decks at tables. What did you see?
So I did see quite a lot of Greyjoy. There was another Greyjoy Rose at the final table. I think I saw more Stark than I expected. There was quite a bit of Stark. The final table had a Stark Fealty and a Stark Greyjoy. There was a bit of Martell, which I kind of expected, because they've obviously got those deterrents that work quite well in melee, plus those kind of rush moves at the end. There was a little bit of everything. I think a lot of people were just trying something out and seeing what happened. So there was a bit of Night's Watch in there, even though the wall's quite hard to defend in melee. But yeah, it was a mix of things. I think the Stark was the thing that... I knew that Stark had kind of cancellation, stealth, renown, stuff like Eddard and stuff that was nice, but I didn't expect there to be quite as much as there was.
Well, there are some interesting things with Stark, which is, you know, winter is coming, which everybody sees as a way to boost military claim, can just as easily boost power claim,
which
can help with the sort of surprise extra power that you need from that kind of thing. Any particularly storied? I know your final match was three Europeans and one poor lonely American.
So
that was Elway from France and Laplante from France.
Yeah.
Do you know who the fourth player? They always get lumped into this and other category, sadly.
I think he was called Cameron.
Cameron Davidson?
I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, I think so.
Okay, that seems likely.
He definitely won a regional somewhere, because I remember he had the mat and he talked about that a little.
So any particularly storied matches where you got that big satisfying surprise swing, or where the game was in someone else's hands and you snatched it away?
Yeah, tell us about a time you owned someone and then probably stood up at the table and been like, yeah, bitches!
So there were a couple of things that... I mean, there were only... So, you know, I don't want to kind of over-egg it, because it was a quite quick tournament, so there were only three rounds to it, but it was done Swiss, so the final table was the three of us who were undefeated, plus I think Cameron was one win, one draw at that point. I remember the second game, for some reason, I just got hit loads for no real reason. Like,
wait, did you have your Conquest National winner playmat? Because that might attract some attention.
I only brought that out for the final table, because everyone else had their playmats, and I'd already been identified as the Conquest guy at that table, so I was like, oh, I might as well play with the playmat. When else am I gonna get to do that? But the second table, there was another Greyjoy player, and for some reason he opened heads on spikes. And he could have picked anyone. He was like, you know, what will you offer me? And I was like, well, I've got an Iron Fleet scout out, so I can buff your things as well as mine. But no one else could offer him anything. But for some reason, he still hit my hand. And so I had a dead character. In the first round, I lost two more characters to just random things that happened. So my dead pile was three characters on round one. And I'm like, this is melee. I'm not supposed to get killed. People are supposed to go for power. But the final table, so that was quite interesting, because I think there was definitely a difference between the kind of French play, the American play, and perhaps my own kind of less experienced play. So I think, you know, Laplante and Quentin, lovely guys, but I think they came across a bit aggressively, which kind of put Cameron off a bit, and that created a kind of weird dynamic, and I wasn't quite sure what was going on. And so there was a point where... it was probably 50-50 between whether Cameron would take out my Balon or Quentin's Balon. At that point in time, Quentin had a lot more power. I think he had like 7 power or something, and I had like 2. I had like Knight of Flowers out, and I think I also had Asher out, but Quentin had Standy Randy out with a couple of other like decent characters. And I think what it came down to was that Quentin had said a couple of things to Cameron, just sort of slating his decisions, so Cameron went for Quentin's Balon. And then there was a round where it was... so it actually only lasted 2 rounds that game. And I did manage to go from 2 power to 15 power, which I was quite happy with, given that I'd played a noble cause and not Rise of the Kraken or Clash of Kings or anything as my plot. But it just so happened that as people were trying to prevent each other from winning, there was that window for me to go through. So that was quite satisfying, I guess.
Squeezing through the middle there. The right rivals, the right unopposed, the right great Kraken.
I had to land it right. Like I got exactly that 13 power I needed. I couldn't get any more, and if I'd got any less, I would have been hit, obviously.
So I'm very glad to hear that it sounds like this has all the makings of a good melee. You know, the rivalries that show up in the game, the person squeaking through the middle, you know, the big explosive power gain. Obviously, we're going to have to put you on the spot and say you've played a lot of Conquest. You mentioned that that's your go-to 1v1 game. Clearly, we've decided on Thrones, and I'm sure you're still stuck on Conquest. What would it take for Thrones to overtake Conquest? Does Conquest have to get worse? Does Thrones have to get better?
I think for me, like, I'm quite happy to play both games, and some of that is just, you know, local communities and who wants to do what and stuff like that. For me, in the two-player setting, the appeal of Conquest over other LCGs is that it does have this tactical depth from the kind of almost area control side of having different locations you can go to. And that, I mean, that's not something that really exists in Thrones and a lot of other LCGs or CCGs. I feel it gives you a good comeback option as well. And it plays out a little bit like a board game. So that's probably a personal taste thing. And, you know, I really like the plots in Thrones because, again, they give you some options. It's not just about, oh, I drew this and you drew that and the game's already over, as it can be with some of the older CCGs and LCGs. But, yeah, I can't really see something that would make me prefer Thrones as a two-player to Conquest. I mean, obviously, if they completely destroyed the balance of one or either game, that would do it. But hopefully that doesn't happen. But, you know, I really love the fact that Thrones has the melee option. It's a very different game to the two-player, but it's something that you can't do with any other LCG. So, that doesn't really answer the question, I know. But
no, it's a fine answer. It's a fine way of not answering the question. Interesting you bring up the Warlord Command and so on. I've always actually somewhat compared, in trying to evaluate these games, the Warlord committing to a planet to the pseudo-plot phase. And then it's that hidden selection that does determine resources and some other things, and that does interact with your opponent's choice to some extent in determining where battles take place and things like that. And then I've sort of compared, and this is even more of a stretch, the three different icons and three different challenge types to different sort of that tactical feel that you were saying across multiple planets, in which you have three, and some characters can be deployed at all three, if you think of it that way.
Yeah, sure.
But, I mean, that is a bit of a stretch.
I think I'll take the plots and the warlords. you've got control over that, and it's something that sits outside your deck, which is quite nice, but I'm not so sure about the planets and the challenges. It's a nice try, though.
So is there anything else that you'd like to share, specifically with the Thrones community, or about Melee going forward, what you expect to see? Your expert advice?
I'm not sure I can be called an expert at Melee at this point. But, I mean, I just really hope that it's a format that grows and does see some attention. For me, Melee is that thing that makes Thrones different from all the other games out there.
Well, thank you very much for joining us at short notice and for telling us about your experiences at those tables. And congratulations on both of your wins. I know which one you value most highly.
Cool. Thanks a lot. And thanks for having me here.
So we're joined today by two members of, and I was going to call it the Wisconsin meta, but now there's other Wisconsin metas. So this is I pronounce all these foreign names on the cast, and I have no idea how to say your city.
You can just call us Swedish meta now.
It is definitely the Swedish meta, not the Wasa meta, or the DC meta.
Is this because of the beards?
Wow.
That's very beardist of you, Alex.
Hey, I just Jakob and Andreas both. Anyway, all right, fine.
It's because of our affiliation with those two men.
I'm just going to come over this.
I'm not sure what affiliation means in this context. This could be dangerous. For those of our listeners not familiar, we've had both of these guests on, in fact, just around this time last year, where Dan had just recently been crowned Melee champion at Worlds. And Sam had just recently been crowned Joust Champion at Worlds. So apparently they're good at this game, despite the fact that Dan continues to insist that he's a bad player.
I'll also insist that I'm a bad player.
I mean, if I wasn't a bad player, it probably would have been Bratz and I in the finals. So.
I see.
Frustrating.
We talked a lot about 1.0 in our last episode, but to just briefly go over it, because Dan, you got a chance to play your plot in the tournament. I think you finished second in the Swiss. You had a great tournament, right?
Correct.
So tell us a little bit about, did you know you were going to play your plot, like months in advance, whatever happened that was going to be?
Yeah, 100% was going to play my plot regardless of what happened. I actually just built a pretty fun deck the morning of and just rolled with it. Like, I even played the bad plot called Twist of Fate in my plot deck, so that was even more fun.
You played Twist of Fate in your Joust deck?
Sure did.
That is awesome.
I was watching his games a couple times because I scrubbed out and was bad, but I saw multiple board states where he had Twist of Fate out and his opponent had Valor, and that's pretty much the best feeling you can ever have when you're playing 1.0.
You can pick whatever zero claim you want. I can discard zero cards. I could kill zero characters. It's up to you, man.
Yeah, we just call it the skill game. So that's why I ran it. It's so rewarding when you just bin it against their Valor. Even when they have like a one claim plot that has low initiative, you just get to go first and kill all their characters with all the start kill effects. So that's really the main reason I ran it.
Now, Sam, I know that you had a pet Clansman deck that you keep trying to make work for ages.
Yes.
And SoCal brought a Clansman deck and made it work. How upset are you?
They brought a Wheels Within Wheels deck. They didn't bring a Clansman deck.
let's argue this point first of all. I'd like to make one proclamation about Sam's Clansman deck. He got a terrible ruling from Nate at Gen Con. And then we ask Nate at Worlds the same question because the SoCal Clansman guys were literally doing what Nate said in the opposite fashion and getting the correct ruling now. So Sam basically got screwed, and the buddy of ours who also top 16 from the Wasa meta, or Swedish meta, but he didn't join the Swedish meta, so he's just Wasa meta guy.
He's the only Wasa meta now.
Pretty much.
Yes. He was playing Timmit in his deck, and the reason Sam cut Timmit was because of Nate's ruling, but if Sam had known that the Timmit ruling was correct, he would add Timmit in his deck, and that just makes the deck so much more potent and gives it so much more resiliency to Valor. So in my eyes, Sam kind of got screwed, and his deck was actually really good, but he made it a little weaker because of Nate's ruling. So give and take.
What ruling was this? Was this some idea of using Timmit to pay? Because I thought it was generally known that you could use Timmit to pay the save for Tyrion, and therefore save Tyrion and Timmit would be immune.
Yes, that I thought that was generally known too until I asked at Gen Con, and I was told the exact opposite by Nate. So
yeah, it was just completely a mishap, I guess, on Nate's part. But
this is Minnesota colluding against the Swedish meta. Then
I want to let it be known that I have no grudge against Nate. I don't really care.
Correct.
I lost because I played bad and I played good people. It has nothing to do with
it. We love Nate. I'm not trying to attack him at all. I'm just saying Sam's deck would have probably had a lot more potency had he not gotten that ruling at Gen Con.
All right. It's all in the Timmit. Timmit, by the way, who has a bit of a beard now. So this was one comment that I was hearing about Sam. Twice in the stream, people mentioned, and looking at you, that you have a Jedi beard.
It's more of a Swedish meta beard, Alex.
Yeah, it's totally a Switzerland beard.
Switzerland! Ah!
Hi, Dark Nash.
Hey, how's it going? I had to say that. It drives him crazy.
So let's move on a little bit then to 2.0. I know that, Kid, you mentioned that you had basically built this deck sort of right on the cusp. How much 2.0 had you guys played beforehand? Was this just going in blind?
Well, I probably had played about 8 games of it, give or take. I mean, I'm familiar with the cards, but Sam and my roommate John Peters, who played in the 2.0 tournament as well, they had played a lot more at my current house right now with John. So that was, I mean, I had exposure to it and I knew what was going on. And I was actually going to play Sam's exact same deck, but ended up switching at the last minute because I had like never looked through the Targ cards, and I looked through them and I'm like, this kind of feels like a Stark deck. So I get to play No Quarter and Greywind with Plaza Punishment and Dracarys. So I thought that was a lot of fun and switched to it at the last second with the help of, Ryan Leonard, the guy who top 16 with the Clansman deck in 1.0. He kind of helped me build it at the last minute.
So, out of curiosity, does this mean you weren't really a Stark loyalist? You were a Stark mechanic loyalist?
Yeah, I mean, sure.
So whatever house plays most like Stark is the one you're going to keep playing?
I mean,
I doubt that. He was playing a lot of Stark before that.
That is true. I tried to make Stark work with my second deck I ever built, and it was very lackluster and average. So.
And Sam, I gather then from that explanation that you had a little more prep going into this.
Yeah. I don't know if we can say this, so you might have to edit it out, but we were in the playtest group, so we had a little help from that.
If your name's in the book, you can say it.
Okay, yeah. My name's in the book, so I can say it. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't get any core sets at Gen Con, but ever since the game was released, I've probably been playing a decent chunk of games with the various people that have picked up 2.0. Yep. That live around Wausau.
It was always, like, funny. I listened back to announcers that the live stream on Twitch and watched my top four game. And they were like, yeah, like, these two have probably played a bunch. And I had actually never met Patrick before. So
Wisconsin's the new hub.
I guess so. Just gravy training players together.
Fantastic.
Or people.
So people got a chance to actually watch, Kid, your game against Jakob. Now it was recorded by Rob St. John's and posted, in fact, the day we're recording today. They also got a chance to watch you in the top four against Patrick Haynes. So you were playing Targ Lanny. You had a couple of... I mean, I know you mentioned you threw the deck together sort of last minute, but I think there are some choices that you made that I'd like to hear you justify, even if the justification is oops.
Sure.
So one thing that a lot of people are talking about is right now a debate between using summons and counting coppers. Was there any particular reason why you swung one way over the other?
Counting coppers is bad. It only gives you 2 gold. That's terrible. I'm not about that lifestyle.
All right.
It's a lifestyle choice, Alex, and he's a player, and players need to
live. You can live your life any way you want, but if you're making 2 gold from your plot, that's not how I want to live.
Correct. Especially in such a resource, fun-policed meta. Where every single resource you have is at a premium. I just, except for card draw, in my opinion. Like, only getting 2 gold is a very big deal. Like, that is not very premium at all. That was the main reason. And summons, I mean, it's like you're tutoring, so it's especially in a, you're trying to set up your Danny combo, like that's another very good reason to choose summons over draw 3, because you get to dig 10 cards instead of only your 3. You get more looks at that exact piece that you're looking for. So that's another good reason, I guess.
And then the other big one, I think, is the choice to run neither Varus nor Wildfire. Can you go into that for a bit?
Yeah, I mean, again, if you're building a Danny deck, I see no reason to want Varus unless your game plan is to do it on turn 1, because you're not going to want to marshal your Dragons or your Danny and then just Varus them away. Like, you're setting up your board so that your Danny can take control of it with your Dragons in play. So if you're resetting your board and killing your Dragons or Danny, like, that is just eliminating your game plan. So I really saw no reason to want to run Varus. Plus, like, 6 gold for a 3-strength stealth guy, just, again, I'm not really a fan of that effect. So.
And it turns out if your opponent uses him in a challenge when you have a gold and a standing dragon... in a top 16 match, that's not very good, is it?
Hey, Jakob is an amazing player. I played him 3 times in Joust, so to speak. Twice in the 1.0, and then obviously in the top 16. And the guy is just a stone-faced killer. Like, he makes great plays. And I'm not going to say he made a bad play, but he realized it, and he's like, yeah.
You're not going to say because you don't have to.
I made a mistake, I understand it, and I capitalized.
At least you did it with a Swedish meta, mate.
It's all about the Swedish meta, you know, like I said.
And so I think the reason that people wonder about Wildfire is because Targ inherently has some cards that get you back around that, Fire and Blood with the Hatchlings, for instance, where you can instantly set up your board state as a 4-3.
I mean, Wildfire is a great plot. I'm not going to say it's bad. Just, I don't know. I felt like I didn't need it with all the kill that I had already had. Like, you don't need to be killing more of your board off if you're killing all their Chud with your Plaza of Punishment, and then you also have your Dracaris to push through their good characters. So there's no reason to want to kill off your extra characters when they won't have any.
Well, that was your pre-tournament rationalization. Would you agree with that after the tournament?
Yeah, absolutely. I never really felt the need like I would want to Wildfire. So it just, I never missed it. Like, I mean, the stats on Wildfire are even great too. Like, a 4-7-1 is very good. But based on my theory before the tournament, I didn't miss it at all during. So I was pretty happy with leaving both of those card choices out of the deck.
And the last card that I think probably garnered attention is the fact that you weren't actually running Milk the Poppy, were you?
No, I sure wasn't.
Milk's a trap.
Milk is a bad choice.
Milk was a bad choice.
So why no Milk?
Based on my discussion with Ryan Leonard, who was playing a Stark Fealty deck, which was pretty sweet, he's like, I've played some games with Targ. You don't need Milk. Just leave it. The deck is good enough without it. Just trust me on this. And I'm like, okay, I mean, that's fine. I can take you for your word. You're a skilled player, and I definitely respect your decision. So went with his instincts, and there probably should have been one in the deck, but that's just based on the fact that there was so much Targ running. And if they get a Danny and you are facing their Danny down and they Milk your Danny, you're very far behind. The Milk Mirror on Danny is a big deal.
With that "when you're very far behind" comment, that leads us perfectly into one of my favorite matches of the tournament, your top four match against Patrick Haynes.
Yeah.
I would say you were very far behind. I would say the entire stream audience had written you off when your Danny got put to the sword. Wasn't really a way to play around that at that point. And then your power total just kept going up and up and up. Tell us a little bit about that game.
Yeah, so I dubbed the nickname Tassa Kid. It's like a reference from Magic for Tassiger.
Worse than Dark Knight.
It's a pretty bad name, but I called myself like once or twice because there's a card in Magic called Tassiger. As a funny guy likes to say, he lives for the bananas and the grind. So that whole match, I was just grinding and trying to get, you know, my unopposed challenges when I could and win Dom. Just straight up grinding, and that's really what it was. It was just uphill battle, trying to get, you know, your power when you can. You could see my facial reaction when my Danny gets put to the sword. I'm like,
yeah,
it's deflating, and I'm like, okay, so he's played his second put to the sword.
You're like, crying inside.
It hurt like hell, for sure. But you're not just gonna scoop. Like, that's especially when I was in a winnable spot. It's not like I had zero power at the time, so I set up a game plan where see what happens next turn. I get lucky and I draw two cost characters to keep me in it next turn. And then I set it up where I'm at like 11 power or 12 power or something like that. And I'm like, I'm going to hit summons here. And if I get lucky and hit my third Jorah with my two Waking the Dragons, I think I can steal this game, I say to myself. And I do get lucky and hit my third copy of Jorah with that summons, which I wouldn't have hit if I had played counting coppers. And it feels really good. Like, I'm like, oh my god, did I just steal this win? And he leads military, and the alarms go off in my head, and I'm just like, why the hell is he leading military with his Balon? Like, that just seems so fishy. Like, he could just power me and be in great shape. But then, like, I think he does win or lose on the crackback. So I run the calculations in my head. Like, you'll see me do it for 3 minutes on the stream.
Yep.
And I remove power from his house, my house, blah, 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 blah.
You look at the Widow's Wail, you look at the Waking the Dragon.
I have the Widow's Wail pulled to the front of my hand like three different times, like I'm going to do it. And then...
Card has ambush, did you know that?
Yeah, it does, it does. That's why I have it pulled to the front of my hand. The commenters go, why is he saving 2 gold for Jamie? But that was never my intention. I was never saving the 2 gold to stand Jamie, because I did not need to stand Jamie. I was saving the 2 gold for an ambush on my Illyrio, so he could get to 6 and win the power challenge if Patrick didn't make a power challenge against me. So that was my thought process. I'm not really sure. I kept coming to 14 power in my calculations. If I stuff his challenge and win it with the Widow's Wailed Jorah, and I was just wrong. It was just a bad calculation on my part. I would have gotten to at least 16 power, I think.
I think that's right, yeah.
It is what it is.
I mean, I was very glad to see both Kit and Sam do very, very well, partly because it means that there's some 1.0 skills that carry over, so I have a chance in this new game.
Oh, very much so.
From your overall tournament experience, Kit, would you say that this is still Thrones? Would you say this is 1.0? What would you say the biggest difference from 1.0 is?
Efficiency. It's a big, big thing with 2.0 is your efficiency. Stuff is obviously overcosted for a reason. Like, that's where they want to push the game. And I don't really have a problem with it at all. I mean, like you said, the skills do transition over. It is still just a challenge-based game. But your card quality, like, you have powerful cards, obviously, but in terms of being a zero drop that has two strength and two icons, you're not getting that in this game. You're glad paying two for a card that has two icons and is two strength. Like, you're happy with that. That's good chud in this game, so to speak.
All right. Well, let's move on a little bit to someone who played a lot of those chuds and what's sort of being called a mini curve, even though I'm not entirely sure if that's an accurate representation.
Oh, God, don't use that name, mini curve.
Yeah, can I come out and say that I hate that term?
Yeah, okay, that's like a made-up name by a terrible
I'd like
podcast.
I'd say my deck had a curve, like a normal curve, what you should be aiming for. Not that it's an outlier.
So I think what people really want to hear, well, aside from whether left and right is bad and how you enable superiority and all
Alex,
this other
we
stuff.
Know our stance on left and right. It's good, right, Sam?
They're pretty good.
Bam! A champion just agreed with me.
Are you two feuding about left and right?
Feuding fans women.
Oh, you didn't hear what happened? I said left and right was all right. And him, this Alex, the hyena, jumped on me and tried to tear me apart with his friends. But I know. Now I've been proven right, and yeah, it's a good feeling, I'm telling you.
Yeah, John Bruno wins tournaments with 63-card decks. That doesn't mean it's the right choice.
If I had ever argued for a 63-card deck, you would have seen me throwing it in your face after.
I'm making the same argument on left and right.
Did you hear my argument for left and right, Hines, or...?
We want to right now. Tell us.
All right. Let's hear your argument.
So I wanted cheaper dudes with a military icon, probably three or four of them. I could play House Dane Knight, but I felt like the intrigue icon was pretty much irrelevant because I already had a bunch of big intrigue dudes that I could win challenges with if I needed to. And so the decision was I can get this very weak intrigue icon, or I could have this chud that has a huge upside at some point. He can sit out there. Maybe I draw the other one. Maybe I don't. He's still giving me the military icon I want. But if I ever draw the other one, which I had the tools to find, they just become insane on defense, and they're still huge. They're just way above the curve then.
And
bam,
yet,
that is so right, Sam. That's exactly what I said. So.
I know people are certainly want to hear me say that Sam is right and eat my hat or
say
whatever,
it.
But you're wrong.
You got to keep in mind, too.
Why do you think they're bad?
You got to keep in mind.
Oh, don't ask him, Sam.
You're running two copies of them.
Sam?
I kind of want to play three.
Hold on. Let's pause for a second.
Good for setup.
Think about what Sam's deck goal, what his goal for the deck was. It was to go second, right?
And they're so much better in that situation if you can get the two of them.
You didn't see my top 16 game. I don't think anyone filmed it. But his first turn, he's playing Bear of Fealty. He has like a Mel and some other dudes on his flop. He opens Noble Cause. I open Calm. He goes first. He marshals like a Stannis and a couple other dudes. His board is huge. My turn, I have a left out, and I think maybe Ghast and Grey and Sunspear. I don't remember. Definitely one of the two. I think I might have had Ghast and Grey and then like the Wildling doofus. But so my turn, I play a Varus with a King's Road, and I dupe up my left. So
and he cries a little inside.
So afterwards, my board was still left, which is pretty good.
Still left.
I saw what you did there.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's right.
Damn it.
One up again. Now we just got to create a champ card called Niddle.
That's what I'm saying. There were three bodyguards. They just,
is there really?
No, it's Elena's play. She only pretends she is left and right, but there are identical triplets. So there's always a third one around somewhere doing dirty work for her.
Yeah, that's what George told me.
All right. So how did you stumble upon this deck, or how did you decide to play Martell, which no one was playing, and how did it happen?
I mean, even ever since like playtesting, I thought Ghast and Grey was just one of the best cards in the format, maybe the best card even. Like, it's just so efficient, like exchanging two gold for six or seven or five or some number greater than two. Like, it Like we were talking about earlier, this game is about efficiency. It's not really about drawing a bunch of cards most of the time. Mm-hmm. So I was drawn to Gaston Grey, and I mean, like, House Messenger and Arian are both good cards. Ario Hote does pretty insane too.
Green Blood Trader, Sam.
Oh, sorry, not House Messenger.
Better than House Messenger.
Yeah, it is
better than House Messenger. Yeah,
you don't have to show him.
And he costs two in a different meta. I mean,
foil.
Yeah, so I guess my initial draw was trying to make the best Gaston Grey deck I could.
All right, and there's actually one specific inclusion in your deck that I'd really like to ask about how it performed in the tournament. I quite like this plot, and this is Naval Superiority.
Sure, yeah. The card is good. It's tough to play. Like, you can't really... It's not like a blockade that you can play on the first turn in 1.0, because if they play, like, Calm Over Westeros, you just had a 2-gold plot and didn't do anything. But there are times when you can get a read on them. Like, if you Milk of the Poppy something, you can kind of smell a confiscation coming, and you can use that to your advantage. A lot of the times, even if it doesn't hit, it still has 7 initiative, which is what I want. I just, like, if I go second, like, I'm perfectly fine with not hitting if I have to. Like, I'm planning for that.
The card is great.
Yeah.
I'll go on record and say it's absolutely amazing. I probably wish that I had one in my deck.
It's a good seventh plot. Like, I'm not always going to play it even very early at all, or if at all in the game, hopefully. But, like, if they have no board and you know they're going to Noble Cause, you probably just win the game on the spot if it's in your deck. So.
Yeah, and it has synergy with Gaston as well.
Yep.
And then you just got mileage.
That was what initially drew me to it. Like, if you bounce a King Robert and you know they're going to Noble Cause the next turn, well, then they lose, so...
I think a lot of people played it and then got frustrated because they kept whiffing with it and then they just put it down. But I think it's like what Sam, you got to really be able to call your opponent. So it takes a lot of skill and a lot of playing. And I think you did both. So
it's definitely the seventh plot in my plot. Not necessarily played seventh. It's just a tool that I want to have, but I necessarily might not always want to play.
Were we like talking before the tournament? You're like, I think I might cut this. And I'm like, Sam, come on. We have a mantra, and it's called Greed Wins Games. And
Skill Wins Games.
And, yeah, he was convinced and definitely made the right choice, in my opinion. Like, I watched a few games of his, and it seemed like it was, you know, holding its own.
Now, you also included another plot that I imagine saw very little play in the field. I assume that's because of the 9 initiative that you were running Clash of Kings?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I like that plot a lot.
Yeah.
We kind of joke a little bit about how the intrigue and the military challenges don't matter in this game, and it's all about the plot power challenge. And so it's kind of like you're running a 2-claim plot that has 9 initiative. It's not 100% true, obviously.
Get hit by naval superiority.
That is true, too. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's very good. There's obviously synergies with Elena's informant and things like that, but... Mm-hmm. It's just very good to close out a game or just to get a huge swing and get you up to 10 or 11 power, and then just you can normally close from there.
So we talked about Milk Over the Poppy now a couple times for different reasons, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering what your thought of Milk of the Poppy is in the new meta with taking the black. Do you think it's still something that's going to be in a lot of decks, or do you think because of the ability for people that are playing Bera or Banner to Bera to search out a Maester that can easily remove it, that it'll go down in popularity?
I would say it probably goes down a little. You still might have to play it, but yeah, that definitely hurts against Bera when they can just tutor out Lomas or whatever his name
is. But they also have to be playing that plot in their plot deck, and your plots are very restrictive. Like, you're playing each plot for a purpose. So, like, yeah, it is going to feel real good playing At the Gates or whatever it's called in this format.
Here to Serve, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a kingdom or an edict?
Yes.
Oh.
But it's only 3 gold anyways, right?
Yeah. In my opinion, the Bar deck has a very streamlined approach when it comes to what plots they're choosing. So playing that might not always be an auto-include, I guess. So that would be one reason for me to not fear it as much, and I still think Milk has great value. Coming from the guy who didn't play any in his plot or in his deck.
Yeah.
And I said it wouldn't be as good, and I played 3, but...
Yeah, like, I think it definitely still has a ton of value.
That actually leads us into a very good question. People are definitely looking at that deck of yours, Sam. It's being net decked. It's losing in the hands of less skilled players than you. It isn't winning in the hands of any more skilled players than you, because I think we haven't found too many of those yet.
Oh, boy.
But people obviously want to know what you think you would change with the new pack and with the cards that have been spoiled so far in the next cycle. So, for instance, would you replace Left and Right with this awesome new military weenie that when it dies discards an opponent's card? Leading question.
Duh.
I might trim a left and a right. Maybe I'd trim one left. Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about it a bit, and I haven't really come to any conclusions, because obviously the military weenie is good and would maybe dissuade me from playing left and right a little bit, but I still think there's such a high upside.
I find at least it's a mild moral victory deep down there that you're at least considering it.
No, Heinz, never.
Yeah,
we concede nothing as the Swedish meta to you.
I am definitely debating playing the new At the Gates, and I don't think I can play the one cost event that tutors for a location, but
that seems tough. What about looking a little further afield at First Snow? So you got a lot of characters that have come into play effects that would be awesome, but also the economy base makes that a little bit hard in second edition, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would probably play First Snow. I've seen a lot of people saying about like how First Snow would wreck the deck, and I don't think that's true at all.
I have the opposite opinion, yeah. We were talking after the tournament, people like laughing that, oh, this card just crushes his whatever mini curve deck, whatever you guys are calling it.
Well, don't say you guys.
No, these people are wrong. I will snap play this and laugh in their face because my cards are better than theirs. My Gaston Grey synergy, and my Arianne synergy. Like, I'm happy if they're playing it against me.
Yeah, well, I really want more ways to trigger Ario again instead of having to march him to the wall. So
Well, Elena's informants, the Green Blood Traders, the Ario Hota are just a few examples of those potential that you get.
I mean, I don't think you can First Snow me unless you have like three characters. Like if I have a Ghasting Ray out, one gets bounced, one gets marched, and you have no board.
Heck, even with a Sunspear out, it's a risky proposition.
Same thing. And if I have an Ario sitting in my hand and an Arianne in play, I don't know what you can do.
And then he gets to play his smaller dudes out when you have only expensive stuff, and you're going to lose the game anyways. So
yeah.
So I was extremely happy to see Martell in the final. I was extremely definitely cheering
surprised.
For the deck. I was quite surprised.
Me too.
And I'm really, really happy with it. I think it will change a lot of what people are playing and a lot of what people are saying about the game right now. I mean, people find a different deck to whine about it every 2 weeks, obviously, and that will be true for a while. But neither Martell, Tyrell, or even Night's Watch had entered that rotation of decks that people complain about. And I'm hoping that people start complaining about Martell. That's sort of fundamental to Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think it's a significant amount better than the current metagame, if at all. I think there are a lot of viable decks. I don't really think any of them are too good right now.
Well, I think that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, no, it is a good thing.
Healthy meta is a good meta.
Now, we did get a chance to see two of your games as well, Sam, but of course the final was a little bit one-sided, or you had a superb setup.
I think all of my top 16 games I won 15-0.
So are there any storied matches you'd care to tell us about, ones that maybe highlighted what this deck can really do?
So my top 16, top 8, and top 4 matches, every single game my opponent led with Noble Cause, I led with Calm Over Westeros. They played a bunch of stuff. I played a Varus and blew up the board. So, and then either had a Ghasting Grey or a Sunspear out, which was pretty absurd because they pretty much lose the game at that point. And and I honestly, my finals game was very similar with the March to the Wall.
And the six, yeah.
Did you ever hit like a Treachery on your Varus or something like that just slowed your
game? I didn't play Lannister the whole day, but I don't think they were very well represented.
No, they were not, yeah.
But there are definitely counters to just flapping a Varus after they play 20 gold worth of characters and have one gold up.
I was sort of hoping to hear a little bit about your last match just before the cut, because you were playing against fellow Swede Jakob Holtman.
Yeah. Fellow Swede, the Swedish meta, baby.
I know, it's catching. It's fellow catching. Swede Dan Seafeld, too.
Yeah.
And this was, this is the 2014 Joust champion against the 2015 Joust champion, and you guys went to a draw.
Yeah, we did. Pretty crazy, huh?
Tell me a little bit about how that game went.
It was a long, slow grind. And he didn't have a good setup. I had Sunspear Gastengray early, couldn't really make challenges. Just kind of ended up, we played pretty slow, I don't know. But in the end, like, he could make some challenges, and I could make some challenges, and it just turned out that it was going to end up being a draw.
It was a weird game. Like, they were talking about it at the bar later that night. They're like, yeah, that was, like, the hardest game I've ever played. Like, it was so tight the whole game. And we ended a draw? Like, what the hell happened? And Jacob's like, yeah, I was literally just trying to get one power, like, 1 point. So I would make the cut with 25 points. So they were, both of them would have been real happy with a mod win or a mod loss, because, like, I still think their 25 points would have got in. But the fact that they both drew was, like, crazy. I didn't see a play mistake in the last, like, 20 minutes of the match. It was tight the whole way. Like Sam said, Gastengray and Sunspear are just so good at doing that to your opponent. Like, it eliminates their options and puts you in a favorable position.
Yeah, so. he had a plaza of punishment out the whole game, too, I think. So, like, I couldn't make power challenges that were bad for me, and he couldn't really make any challenges, and it was just very awkward.
We've already reached the stage where people can control lock games. Look at that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's kind of what happens in that deck when you play Varus. Like, if you have either of those locations, they need to play three characters the next turn, or they can't make challenges and they still might lose their hope. Like, if they play two characters, they'll probably lose one to a military challenge and they'll lose one to a March to the Wall, and I probably played three characters, so I still have something left. And then the game kind of just continues like that, where they need to somehow marshal enough dudes to stay ahead of the military. They can't do military
attritions.
I Sunspear them or Gastengray them.
This earns you your second card design. It now for your Swedish meta, if we include Jakob into that, there's what, six card designs to throw around in this lot? Except
two and one.
Kid has two.
Sounds like six to me. Yeah. I have three.
Oh, yeah.
Three for Kid, two for Sam.
Yeah, I mean, I have two left, but
yeah. So that's a total of seven card designs in the Swedish meta.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of card designs.
DC meta
just might be. Although Corey's maintaining that three pace, just with Jonesy too.
He's doing well. So obviously, that was the dark horse winning. It wasn't expected to see Martell in the final. What would have beat your deck consistently?
I mean, I haven't found a matchup that just crushes me, because they're so bent on playing big dudes that you just have a natural advantage. And if they flood the board, you virus them, and they can still lose that way. But, I mean, like, I think, like, a Lanny deck with Treachery would be pretty good, would be a good way to start. I mean, I have plenty of things you want to cancel.
Both Gaston and, exactly.
Yeah. I think Greyjoy maybe with... They have a chance. I don't think the matchup is horrible for me, but, like, I don't want to get my good locations knelt repeatedly. Yeah.
If you can somehow control his Ari and Martell, that's probably the most important card in his deck.
Yeah.
So,
Kid and I played a couple of Martell mirrors, and both of those games devolved into, like, 15 plot shit shows. So... We just, like, we both had Sunspears, and neither of us could make a challenge. It was just horrible.
That was actually what deterred me from playing the deck, too.
Oh, and neither of us had Wildfire Assault, either, so...
Wait, if you both have Sunspear, it still only affects one of the two players, whoever's going second.
Yeah, but... I don't know.
You can't both be going second. Something's happening wrong here.
That was a big reason why I didn't play the deck, is because I wasn't sure how fast it could win. And it's 55-minute rounds, so... If you get behind, it's kind of hard for the deck to catch up sometimes. So that was a big reasoning why I didn't play the deck.
Yeah, I felt like I felt comfortable with pretty much any matchup that someone could throw at me, but I don't think I was, like, heavily favored in any of them. So.
And that just speaks volumes to the amount of work Sam put in for the deck. Like, he was super comfortable with, like he's saying, with every matchup, and for me, I wouldn't have been, so...
Well, that's about all I had. I do want to mention a wonderful comment of yours. You posted your deck list, of course. Thank you very much for doing that. Followed by the words, "Here's the thing, if anyone cares." How much of a sort of humble nod to the fact that you know you'll have like 600 people pounce on that deck list 10 minutes after you post it.
I'm a humble guy.
That's perfect.
You know what Leonard says about people that say they're humble?
What?
If you say you're humble or modest, you're not. Oh. So,
yeah, prove it.
Hey, never talk bad about Sam Swedish brats.
Yeah.
The Swedish meta. Swedish meta!
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for sharing all that that information. And it seems like since we only bring you guys on when you're champions, we'll see you next year around the same time.
Yeah, sounds good.
Deal.
I have a story to tell you off the cast if you want, though.
Can I put this link up that says I have a story to tell you that's not for the cast and then not leave any of the rest up?
Sure, but you also have this part where I say that it's really erotic. You have to add that.
We're joined by Patrick Haynes from Wisconsin, not from the same meta as our other two guests for this week. Now, before he even says a word, I want to read out a message that he sent us a couple weeks ago. So I heard you guys are talking on the cast this week about potential show segments and whatnot, and I don't know how far back you guys are booked at this point, but I'd love to come on and maybe build a solid 2.0 deck for Worlds with you guys. Why do you need us?
Yeah, I guess it worked out pretty okay for me in the end.
Yeah, you didn't need us.
You made the final table at the inaugural Worlds tournament this year in Minnesota, but with Greyjoy, too, which is not a house that I was expecting to see represent all that highly in the top cut. So given that we would have been useless, educate us. Why Greyjoy?
Well, I mean, it's a deck that I've been working on for a while. I kind of talked about that in my little mini interview with Nate afterwards, but I really like Greyjoy in second edition. I think that obviously everybody knows that Bear is really cool, and everybody on Card Game DB is always like, oh, Bear Fealty, it's the best deck of all time, but I was like, guys, it's going to be something else, and I decided to try to make that something else Greyjoy. So I basically just put all the really good pieces of Greyjoy together into a deck with some killing power, and turns out it works out pretty well. So
I think you're selling yourself short. I think not only did you make a very good Greyjoy deck, you also piloted that expertly. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to the commentary on your final match where, you know, you were far behind and clearly a very, very difficult position to be in, but you were impressing the commentators and the audience with decisions that you were making that they had not foreseen, that the audience had not foreseen, and that were the right plays. Your march choice, making sure you bluff the we do not sow, that kind of stuff. Just solid play, even when you're behind.
Yeah, I did get a chance to watch that match. It was a little rough to watch, just being like, oh, man. All of the, like, just looking at Sam's hand, I was like, oh, gosh.
There was no way out.
There's just nothing to be done here. I saw in the stream afterwards those three tiers of bliss, and I was like, Jesus Christ. What am I even supposed to do with that? So,
hey, as people have said, you played Balon and ate a Tears of List, but that's what you had to do. You had to make him play it, because otherwise you could not advance your board position. You know
that. Yeah, yeah. That turn was pretty much play Balon or play Asha, and somebody's dying if he has Tears of List. So
let's pretend our listeners don't know about your deck and haven't seen the stream. Tell us, you know, in a nutshell, what it is.
So basically, I think it's a pretty standard curve of a deck I've got for second editions. Pretty much three copies of all of the major characters. I've got three Euron, three Balon, three Asha, three Aeron. I think only two Theons, because that guy's annoying. But so
you're right here first, guys.
So basically just all the good characters from Greyjoy, and then one thing I really like about Greyjoy is that all of their low-cost characters, well, most of them, have the Ironborn trait. So if you get Aeron on the table, you can basically just cycle your Claim Soak every turn and just make it so that you're not losing any characters at all, really, which really helps in the kind of aggro v aggro matchup that I came across a couple times during the tournament. And then I've got a lot of unopposed tech, so Great Kraken to generate power and card draw when I'm getting those unopposed challenges. And Put to the Sword obviously really capitalizes off of that with Balon especially. He's just a free put to the sword, and it's always great.
So going into this tournament, I don't know what you were expecting, but I was certainly expecting a fair bit of Baron, a fair bit of Targ, and that certainly did represent, although not in the proportions I thought. What is your game plan against those matches?
So against Baron, I have basically two game plans. Either if I see put to the sword in my opening hand, my plan is basically just kill Melisandre. Hit them in every possible way that I can to just make sure that she is dead. Because if Melisandre's dead, the game is pretty easy to mop up usually with Balon. Robert can be kind of troublesome, but I can usually control the initiative and just win the game from there. If I don't see any way to kill Mel, I generally just kind of play a little defensively and try to find Seal of the Hand or try to just sneak in power challenges enough that they can't really draw with the red keep and I can win. Because the Greyjoy deck can actually claim power significantly faster than the Barrow one. As soon as you get that Grey Kraken out, you can start getting two power for unopposed power challenges, which is hard against Baratheon, granted, but with Balon out, it can be pretty straightforward.
And against Targ, then?
Targ is actually what I would consider probably the hardest matchup for the deck. Talked a little bit about that. I'm doing a little tournament report thing that I'm going to put up at some point, and I talked about that in there a little bit, but Targ can be really troublesome if they can play that Dracarys at the right time. In my game against Andreas from Sweden, who's an awesome guy, he Dracarys'd and then Plaza of Punishmented Balon one turn, and that was just brutal. And that was my first matchup against Targ of the day. And so in my second matchup against a Targ kind of Danny Dragons one, I just early game sent Theon like face first into a Dracarys that I knew was there. So I'm just like, I got to get this out of here right away. And he did indeed burn Theon. And then I was pretty safe from there on. So kind of get the Dracarys out of the way and then just smash them.
Now, I figured we should probably ask a few little questions about your experience with some cards that some players may not have played around with much and what kind of use they were to you. So I absolutely love this card, but I think it's underplayed. And this is Lordsport Shipwright. Can you tell me a little bit about how that played out for you in the tournament and what kind of use you got out of that?
Oh, yeah. Lordsport Shipwright is one of my all-time favorite cards now. Before the tournament, I was like, this guy's pretty good. He's a chud. He can kneel some locations.
Like Plaza of Punishment.
Like, yeah. Plaza of Punishment, Red Keep, Gaston Grey. I hear those are pretty good. So yeah. Seems good. He can kneel them. But when I was playing in kind of casual games, and especially with newer players, but also with experienced players, a lot of my games were kind of over very quick. Like either I would win and just kind of wipe the board really fast and win, or I would get Game of Thrones on my sneak attack and my hand would be empty and the game would be over. But as I started kind of refining the deck and making it a little bit better at playing in the long game, I realized that Lordsport Shipwright in those competitive games is just crucial. In one of my games in the Swiss, I think I just kept someone completely economy starved the entire game. He played a King's Road turn one, and I knelt it, and then I discarded it with We Do Not Sow, and then I just kept his second King's Road knelt with the Shipwright and just made sure he couldn't play anything, and the guy was just doing work. And obviously, I like him because I chose him over Asha in that last game for his
And I think he's actually one of the cards that best justifies going first in Greyjoy. I mean, the small bonus on the ships isn't enough, and you're not running Grasp of the Kraken. But Lordsport Shipwright going first can make a huge difference.
Absolutely. Against Baron and Targ, especially. It's
or any economy, if you get first action.
Yeah, oh yeah, so that too, for sure, for sure, for sure.
I would say, so one of the other cards that's somewhat surprising given the way the meta plays out is that you were only running a single Milk of the Poppy. Care to tell us a little bit about that choice?
Yeah, that was a very tough call to make. And it happened that way because I was running Fealty. So obviously I have that limit for 15 neutrals. And originally I wanted to keep my 6 income locations. I ended up changing that the night before Worlds, but I had my 6 income locations, my 3 put to the swords, which I figured, all right, those are locked in. I can't do anything with that. And then originally I had 2 little birds, 2 milk of the poppy, 1 seal of the hand, and 1 little finger. And I just realized that in the Barra matchup, the seal of the hand basically makes or breaks the game. If I can get seal of the hand on Balon, I can basically weather the storm of Barra no matter what they throw out. And so I decided that because that deck was so popular, it would be worth running 2 of those. And I figured rather than cutting a little bird, which is kind of my protection against tears, I would cut a milk because often I just like to kill their characters and they don't need to be blank. So.
But dead characters dead. Don't need to be blank. You're quite right. Did you face Barra decks?
Yes, I faced 2 Barra decks, both of them in the Swiss. One of them, it was, in fact, decided by that Seal of the Hand. I actually got a duped Seal of the Hand on Balon, and that was basically it because he had no way to remove it, and Balon just went to town on everyone, as he is wont to do. And in my second game against Barra, I just had a very strong start. I think I had like Asha with the throwing axe right away, and he just couldn't defend any of my challenges. And I think I wiped the board almost. I think I had a misplay in that game where I could have killed Melisandre about a turn or two earlier, and I was kicking myself, but I managed to pull out the victory in the end, so it was okay.
Well, you mentioned the last card on my list, Throwing Axe. So I've heard mixed reviews of this. I love the design of the card, but I haven't had a ton of experience playing with it, so I would like to hear your stories based on that card.
I have actually given mixed reviews of the card myself. I have gone back and forth on it quite considerably. There, when I first started playing it, I was like, oh, this seems okay. It might be a little win more, and I don't know how much I'm actually going to want to use it. But there are other times when I get it on the board and they just stop defending my challenges, and I'm like, oh my god, this is the best thing in the world. So I think my final review on it is that I like it, and I will continue to run it in Greyjoy just because while its effect is solid, it's mostly just the threat and the fear of it going off that just makes opponents want to just sit back and not defend any challenges, which, spoiler alert, Greyjoy likes a lot. So
certainly true. Greyjoy is a deck that a lot of people are looking at right now, not only because of your exceptional performance in the tournament, but because this new chapter pack has been very, very kind to Greyjoy on probably 3 fronts. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. I'm super excited. I've already actually put together a new deck based on the chapter pack. I think Rise of the Kraken is, you know, it was in first edition Greyjoy decks up until the end of the game, and it's just an amazing plot. I played it in the Melee on Sunday, and I won a game in 2 turns, getting 8 power on the second turn using that plot. And it's just brutal. So, and then the Seastone Chair, if you're getting unopposed military challenges, which basically means if you have Balon on the board, you can just kill whoever you want, pretty much.
And I think, actually, Greyjoy is probably one of the factions that can most easily trigger the support of the people as well.
Oh, absolutely. That, too. That's in there. Just Balon again. Super awesome for triggering that. And just win a challenge with Balon and then go get his boat.
So does that make it completely impossible to play that out of fealty? Both because of the faction Neil for the Seastone and because of the additional support of the peoples?
I wouldn't say impossible, but I have personally chosen to go to a no agenda build for it, and I'm kind of still in the early experimental phase of that new deck. I haven't really gotten a chance to play too much. Most of my meta mates who went to Worlds are like completely tired of cards and games and are worn out from the 5 days of Worlds, but I'm kind of experimenting with the deck and seeing what it does, but I think this no agenda is kind of the way to go now because there's a lot of neutrals that you want.
Well, now, you know, the best way to experiment with the deck would be to bring it to Red Saturday, where Alex and I are going to be hanging out and play some games.
You know, I was actually considering going, but...
And then you heard we were coming and you said, ah.
My girlfriend, who actually lives in New York, I was going to come out and visit her and go to the tournament, but then she decided to come here for Thanksgiving, so I was like, oh, I can't do that. So
you can't go to New York while she's not
while
there.
While she's going there, yeah.
That's a little harsh.
So maybe next year.
That is a shame. So we got to see two of your matches, your top four match and your final match. Obviously, your final match, little one-sided for Sam there. He had all the answers, and you were really fighting an uphill battle. But do you have any particularly storied matchups, any epic tales to share?
I think my top eight match with Ryan Ritter was probably the most epic of my matchups. And I think it was actually filmed by Rob St. John.
Awesome.
I think he is going to be posting that on YouTube at some point.
He started, he posted a top 16 one today, so I would imagine he'd have a top 8 in the next couple of days.
We are a big fan of Rob St. John, so that's great to hear.
Yeah, he's
from Beyond the Wall.
Yeah, so that game, I played Ryan in the last match of the Swiss, actually, and he destroyed me. I got like a two-card setup. He had Drogo and the Drogo's Eric off turn one, and I had no military icons, and I was like, this is not going to be a very long game. So I think that game lasted till about turn two, until I was like, I'm already in the cut. I don't want to suffer through this. So, but we played again in the top eight, and again, he saw Drogo and his Eric on turn one, and I was like, God damn it, this is going to happen all over again. And I managed to narrowly avoid a put to the sword by one strength, two phases in a row, until I managed to build up 9 power, and then I won with one challenge on a sneak attack turn, and it was so close, and it was very nerve-wracking, so that was probably my best game of the day.
I also want to give you credit, and this is out of game, but you've been quite active on the Facebook group and on the boards with people asking you questions about your deck and your choices. And in fact, one particular player being rather critical and you responding very civilly to his,
assholeness,
practically personal attacks. So he'll remain nameless, mostly because I don't think I can pronounce that name. But yeah. For those of you who don't know, Patrick is Red Viper 187 on the boards, and he's been extremely helpful to people asking questions about his deck and his game and his experience in the tournament. So I love to see that. I think that's one of the great ways that we can make the community more competitive, grow to a
You're also writing a little bit, right? You're doing card reviews, I hear.
Yes, I am. I was invited to do that before I did well in the tournament, and I talked to Steve Scantrell on the boards at the Worlds, and he was like, "Oh, that's really cool that you're in the top two." And I was like,
"Credibility, yeah."
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm very excited about that, and I love being on the boards. I remember when I first started playing, I'd love to go on Card Game DB and hear the thoughts of people who had been playing the game longer than me, and so I figured, hey, I might as well help out these newer players now that we have a whole new edition of the game.
Yeah, there's going to be lots of them, so.
You are a first edition player. You've been playing for almost 2 years now, is that right?
I think it's actually been a little over 2 years now that I rethink that. I think that's what I said when I was talking with Nate, but it was, I think, like May of 2013 that I started playing. But I was a very casual player for about a year. I just played within a little friend group, and I didn't even know that there was this whole big community around the game. And then I played in a store championship and got absolutely thrashed. And then people were like, hey, there's like a whole community and we play every week. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then I started doing that too. So,
excellent. So you're going to be going to some major events this coming year, Gen Con, Worlds again?
Yep, that's the plan. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, Worlds is just a drive away, right?
Yeah, and Gen Con, both of them are actually only about like 4 or 5 hours from here. We're kind of right in the middle. It's pretty perfect. So,
are you now a Greyjoy loyalist, or was this tournament and the next one will be some other finely refined concoction where you'll just also be kicking ass and taking names?
Well, we'll see.
No pressure.
Yeah. Thanks. I tend to kind of, I know that especially in this couple months of off season here before we get back into store championships, I'm definitely going to be playing around with a lot of the different decks that are out there and just seeing what's good and what's going on, see if I can find anything that seems really powerful. But in the end, what I'm going to bring to the tournament is going to be what I think is the strongest deck to handle the meta. And this time I thought that was Greyjoy. If I had to play in another tournament this weekend, I would definitely be bringing Greyjoy again because I still think that they're the strongest. But we'll see how things kind of shake up. I've been playing around with Tyrell a lot. Just drawing five cards a turn with Pleasure Barge.
That Pleasure Barge is so nice.
I think everyone's been fooling around with Tyrell.
Yeah.
All right, well, congratulations. A stellar performance. You've definitely put your name on the map in the very first tournament. And obviously from second place, you can only go up, right?
Yeah, thanks.
All right.
I'm looking forward to next year.
It's time for our tip of the week, Alex. What do you got?
It's a really simple one because it's come up a couple of times on Board Game Geek and on Card Game DB.
Oh, is it Know the Rules?
No. That's not a tip of the week. That's a tip of the year, and it takes a long time.
I have to say you're always still teaching me rules in 2.0, which is kind of sad.
Ah, well.
We play in these. Alex is like, don't forget that, you know, you have to do your put the sword now.
I should just stop.
Before claim.
The tip this week is actually to join the Skype group. It's something that we used to plug quite a bit. And even if you're not interested in playing on Octagon, it's a great resource to play on Octagon because you can find players that aren't just going to rage quit when you actually know the rules or aren't going to expect you to know everything if you want to give them a voice call to go through the game and learn it. But it's also a place where people are chatting Thrones, and it's a great place to tune in to think about Thrones during the week, to chat with people, to find a game. And that's
fun
where I get most
of this
news.
When you're traveling, too.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah. We'll leave a link for that, right, Alex?
We will. There's a link to join it where you would copy that link into a Skype window and then click it once it turns into a link in that Skype window. Minor tip within the tip, once you get into the group, type /alerts off so that it doesn't constantly beep at you with people chatting. That can get mildly irritating.
And Alex is there for rules questions.
I'm more than just a rules lawyer, John. Right now, I'm in the, for the second time, we're reviewing some items that have been sent to us on the cast. Somewhat oddly, not oddly, how to say this. John's going to be participating despite the fact that he doesn't have his hand on any of the physical copies.
I haven't seen any of these things.
You may have seen them because they're relatively common at tournaments now.
And I'm hoping to see them in New York, right? You're going to bring them down?
I am going to bring them down. So these are Dracula's tokens. If you've heard of them before, they're essentially bead house-specific tokens. And so they're little glass bead tokens, and he's revised them now for second edition and also revised them so that they can stack on top of one another. So they have a flat top, which is a nice little touch as well. I've been making little mountains of tokens for that. Now, before I start, I should mention that these are sold by a private individual. He's got an Etsy site with some of the older tokens, which were around $15 Canadian for the tokens. Mostly does most of his business through his Facebook site as Dracula's Tokens. So you send him a private message there and see what you need. So I'm not intimately familiar with the pricing or shipping structure, but he does have pictures on that Facebook of almost all of what we're going to talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ones for each of the eight factions, as well as a generic power token, which is a little crown on a blue background. And
have you seen them all?
I've seen them all. He sent me at least one of each of those and then two full sets, a full set of Greyjoy and a full set of Tyrell.
Nice.
And so these tokens, you can certainly fit 15 on a house card, which is nice. You can stack them up, which is nice. They have a satisfying little click to them when you juggle your beads or that sounds like it's a euphemism for something. It sounds kind of interesting.
Don't play with yourself there, Alex.
They have a foam backing that looks fairly robust. They don't slip too much, but you still can glide them across the surface, across cards, which seems like the right choice there. I'm actually pretty impressed with these overall. The foam also, the foam backing depends on which faction you get. So, for instance, the Greyjoy ones have a black foam backing, while the Barrow ones have a yellow foam backing, and so on. So it all comes together to make some fairly nice tokens. Of them all, I find there's a slight difference, or it looks like a difference, in the print quality of the actual logos, where some of them look like they're slightly lower resolution than the others. You would barely notice it unless you were desperately trying to find flaws, because I noticed that the Stark and Targ ones are extremely crisp, which is very nice. The Stark one looks like a very regal wolf. But, for instance, the Night's Watch one looks like it might be a slightly lower DPI by comparison. That said, there isn't a lot of competition on the Night's Watch tokens, because I wasn't terribly impressed with the Team Covenant ones.
Alex. I like to say Team Covenant was the only person that sent me tokens, so I like them a lot more than everyone else, because I actually got tokens to give away on the cast, which we haven't done yet, but we will with these other tokens.
That's right.
As well. So 1,000 likes, right?
1,000 likes, we'll have a couple of things to give away. 1,000 likes.
We're going to have a bunch of giveaways.
And it's happening soon.
Till then, I like Team Covenant more than everyone else, because I got tokens and I saw nothing from anyone else.
So yeah. Anyway, I would say that the Tyrell and the Night's Watch ones, possibly because they're probably the most recent to get worked in, are at a slightly lower, I would guess, a lower DPI from the looks of it than the other six tokens. Other things that I could add about these is that the foam at the backing, I was worried that would be the kind of thing that would either compress too much or get damaged and fray. And in some usage over the last week or so, it looks remarkably good. So I wouldn't have any concerns on that front there. I do have another thing that Dracula's tokens sent me. These are not yet on his site, so I don't believe we have any pictures. And this not being a visual media, you will, of course, have to, I guess,
go to our Facebook page.
I haven't taken pictures of them yet, and I'm not sure I have a camera that will do them justice. But these are little gold coins made out of clay polymer, so they wind up looking a little bit like they're aged wood, which is kind of neat.
I love that.
They have an ink wash on them, and they're really stamped to look like an old coin. What would I describe
it as? Are they like the size of a quarter?
They're slightly smaller than a quarter. They're irregular in shape. They're irregular in shape, which is kind of interesting as well, because old coins used to be.
It makes me sad, though, because I want to do old poker chip tricks with my fingers. And
you might find that somewhat awkward, tough. Because the back here is smooth while the front is stamped. Again,
definitely bad.
This is sort of authentic in the way a lot of these older coins would have been minted, where they weren't regular and there weren't necessarily markings on both sides of the coin. And then so they looked aged with this. So I do feel like it has a sort of... I say it wooden. I think the effect is intended to be a sort of bronze clipped coin look. It has some flexibility to the coin, I notice, in pushing them, which may just be – it's a little
– some spring?
Not necessarily spring. If you push hard enough, you notice that you can warp it just a little bit. It wouldn't happen in daily use, of course, at all. I was just trying to find out what they were made of before I figured out they were clay polymer, because I was wondering if they were wood, which didn't quite seem right. But that's what they feel like, certainly. So I think these are probably about as authentic looking as you can get without being metal, because of the irregularities around the edges and sort of the ink wash. I will try and get a picture up. I have no guarantees that this will be representative.
A good one, yeah.
Exactly. I don't have the camera and the lighting skills to get something that would do it justice. So, yeah, I think this is the first time he's sent these out, or at least because he doesn't have any pictures yet. So I would certainly keep an eye out for his own pictures. So these are gold tokens. They're about a bit smaller than a quarter, irregular edges. One side is stamped and one side is flat and smooth. And I was sent a set of 12, so I imagine that's what's being sold, which is enough to cover whatever general usage you have. The amount of times you count more than 12 gold is quite rare.
Yep.
So that's all I have. The full sets and the demo sets will all be at Red Saturday in 2 weeks to be awarded as prizes by the organizers. They also don't know this yet, so hopefully they're listening right now and finding this out for the first time.
Awesome.
Cliff? Closing comments, John. Do you know the big? I'm giving you a big lead up here. Tournament happening this weekend.
This weekend?
Yes.
No.
The enormous, the biggest Thrones tournament of the year.
Shalik?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, who's going to Shalik, really?
More than go to anything else. Over 250 people.
I'm cheering for Team Sweden. So, you know, all the guys from Wisconsin and Jakob. I'm hoping they take some stuff down. I actually built some decks with
people. You said Sweden instead of Switzerland. I love you, John.
I always do. It's awesome. I actually got the privilege to build a few decks, so I have a few people that are playing decks that I at least contributed on. So it's going to be fun finding out the results as they come in.
Important to note, our next week's episode will not be a Stalic episode. Like this one, like for Worlds, we want to have as many of the champions on as possible. We want to have people who were there. And given Wi-Fi constraints in the castle, news coming out of there is generally a little bit slower. And given scheduling delays of, you know, basically 8 hours between us and them, we're going to try and get those interviews in over that next week and air that episode after Red Saturday. So this shouldn't reflect ill upon Stalic. We think Stalic is awesome. I don't want to sell it short. I just want to mention that there is no way that we can get all of the champions on in the same way, given that we have to coordinate across multiple countries like that.
Speaking of Red Saturday, Alex and I are both attending, so there may be a week without a show.
No, I think that'll be the Stalic episode.
Do you think so? We can make it?
Yeah, I think we can make it during the week.
All right.
Yeah, I think we're fine. But that's the first time you've mentioned on the cast that you're going to Red Saturday.
Yeah, both of us.
We're both going to Red Saturday.
I'm taking a few people from here. We're going to go down, three or four of us, in my car and drive down to New York for a day.
That is the Red Saturday tournament on November 28th. I will be linking it. In fact, there are so many links in this cast description. Definitely check that out, just as a special note, because we've got the top deck lists. We've got these upcoming events. We've got information about Dracula's tokens, which, as we mentioned, we're taking a set to Red Saturday. There's also going to be information about the 2.0 Nationals in the Philippines that they're holding on November 29th. And they're actually doing this a little bit differently. So they've got a fundraiser, which is they're calling it a noble cause, and it's a charity fundraiser for some of the hurricane relief. Typhoon, actually, one of the strongest ever. And so they're doing this as a charity event, and if you contribute over a certain threshold, they'll also send you some of the alternate art cards that they're using.
So what language are those cards in?
English.
Oh. That's too bad.
They've been very responsive in reaching out to us. So if you desperately feel like you want Tagalog cards or...
I do. Let them know. I really do. I would totally contribute for some Tagalog cards.
Yeah, so we'll be linking information on how you can donate here, and I think he has pictures of some of the cards already up, so you can get a feel for that. And we're talking about in the range of about $15 US to this fund. So I think that's a really neat way of fundraising, giving something back for the people who are fundraising, because lots of people want the alt art cards, and if you can do it in this way, then you can feel good about obviously, if you have the artist's support, and they do, you know, selling those out to help raise funds for some charity event. And I think that's
for sure.
That's a neat take on it. There's one other tournament that I wanted to mention, and that was Scantral wanted to let us know that there is a tournament on Sunday the 22nd at the Titan in Duluth, Georgia, and Taking the Black will be legal if it is available. So that's another tournament to go. Lastly, I'd like to talk a little bit about what we're going to have for people next week. Apparently, we're going to have a cold.
Yeah, small coughs.
There are two things that we know are going into next week's episode. One is, as we mentioned, I have some Time Walker deck boxes to review. So if you have any questions about those deck boxes, please make sure to add them in the comments so I can be sure to address them. The other thing is that next week, we should have, in addition to, we'll probably talk about some of the individual spoilers, we should have an exclusive interview with a staff member at FFG that most of you probably don't know.
But it's super important.
Yeah, so we're very excited about this. We've got that recorded. We were just waiting for approval from FFG on airing the episode. And
strangely enough, Alex have and I have both decided together that we like this individual, which is something new because we don't always like everyone.
That's a lie. You like everyone. There's some people I dislike.
All right, we're Canadian. We love everyone. We're done.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
All right, well, let's jump right into it since we've dilly-dallied. I can't believe I just said dilly-dallied. Thank God I wasn't recording.
Oh, but I was.
Oh, dear, that's going in the Easter egg. All right, so